Hello and welcome. I want to transform now over to the parole evidence rule. As you may remember, we just discussed the statute of frauds. The statute of frauds is a provision of New York state law under the general obligations law and under the UCC, which say that certain types of contracts must be in writing and must be signed by the party to be charged. Remember, those seven contracts are a contract for the sale or conveyance of real property, land, a contract that cannot be performed within a year, and the fact that it's not performed within a year doesn't make it fall under the statute of frauds. It's a contract that can't be performed within a year. Under the UCC, a contract for the sale of goods in excess of $500 has to be in writing and signed by a party to be charged. A contract to answer for the debt or obligation of another. I will pay off your student loans. That contract has to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. A contract of an executor or an administrator of an estate to pay off an obligation or to perform a duty of the deceased that's not required under the provisions of the estate. That has to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. A contract in consideration of marriage. And remember, that is a contract with a third party whereby they agree that if you get married, they will do something for that. And as a result, that's got to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. And then a special one in New York State that wasn't part of the traditional statute of frauds when it was passed in by Parliament in England in 1677. But in New York state law now, if you sell a insurance policy, change its beneficiary on that, then that has to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged in order to be enforceable as well. Remember, there's a few exceptions to the rules of the statute of frauds that it's got to be in writing. Obviously, promissory estoppel, that equitable remedy if you have a contract where the person detrimentally relied on it and that it is an equitable remedy that you can prove that there's an unjust enrichment there. That is a grounds for the statute of frauds being not having to put in place. A contract where there's partial performance also is not one where you have a contract that has to be in writing. Why? Because you satisfy the requirements of the statute of frauds, which says that this is our contract. We have a contract. You know what these terms are. Well, you've already started to perform it pursuant to that agreement. So the courts will say, hey, if you've already started it, it doesn't have to be in writing. And lastly, when you have a court testimony or an admission by a pleading in a court action, hey, there was a contract, and here's what it said. Well, if you admit that before a judge and it recognizes it, the court can take judicial notice that there was a contract, and as a result of that, it doesn't have to be in writing. But the statute of frauds is very important. The statute of frauds is the most important contracts. They're very valuable contracts. And that's why the courts say, if you want that contract enforced, it's got to be in writing. And written contracts are always a good thing. They should be the standard thing that you do. Oral contracts are, there's an old saying in law school, are not worth the paper they're written on, because they're not, okay? And it can be confusing. You have to bring in testimony as to what they mean. It's very hard. Well, when you have a written contract, the law says you can't bring in outside evidence. You have to go off that written contract. And that is known as the parole evidence rule. And that's what we're going to discuss right now. Now, let's jump back a little bit because I think it's always good to review and remember that repetition is the mother of learning. That what is a contract? Because we're talking about contracts here. It's an agreement between two or more parties creating obligations that are enforceable or otherwise recognizable by law. That agreement is between competent parties. You need to have parties that have capacity, that understand what they're making. That agreement's got to be based on genuine assent. They have to understand what they're agreeing to, and they have to agree to it. It's got to be supported by consideration. Remember, we did a whole unit on that the last time. It's got to be a promise for a promise. Consideration, they don't concern themselves with the adequacy of it. If I buy a car which is worth $30,000, I don't necessarily have to pay $30,000 for it. Okay, it's whatever is the value of those two parties for it. It's got to be, the contract's got to be for a lawful purpose subject matter. I can't make a contract that's illegal. I can't do something that violates public policy or law. And lastly, it's got to be in legal form. That's what the statute of frauds is for. Some contracts have to be in writing. They have to be signed by the party to be charged. That's what we just discussed. Now, as we discussed, not every contract has to be in writing. We do have oral contracts. It's a good idea to have a written contract because it does away with confusion. You have the terms written out. You don't have to bring in evidence as to what that term was. Why? Because you have it written out. If it meets the requirements of the statute of frauds or otherwise just a good idea, those written contracts are always the way to go. Now, the parole evidence rule is a rule with respect to written contracts. It says that parole evidence, which is oral outside evidence or extrinsic evidence, that means it can be written evidence that contradicts that evidence, it's not brought in a written contract because parole evidence is defined under Black's Law Dictionary as evidence of oral statements. Extrinsic evidence is evidence not appearing on the face of the contract. The reason why you don't do that is because why bother to do a contract? That written contract is what the contract is. It's the essential meeting of the minds of the two parties. It is signed by the parties. That parole evidence only serves to further confuse the court, further confuse the parties. That's why you have the contract. Parole evidence is not admissible unless you say, that contract isn't what it appears because it's fraud or duress or mistake, or there's some problem with that contract that it makes it illegal. The illegality is another term where it is an exception to parole evidence. But overall, parole evidence is not allowed, okay? And that is oral testimony that contradicts the written contract or outside written testimony outside of the contract. The history of the parole evidence rule goes all the way back to Roman law. Why? Because of the fact that it says Roman law held that the highest standard of evidence should apply. Written testimony is obviously better than oral testimony, because people's memories fade. They don't always say things the same exact way. So verbal testimony is not as good as written testimony. And that contract represents the written testimony. So all the way back at Roman law, they didn't want to have written documents overruled by oral documents. When they passed the statute of frauds, along with that, it's a parallel concept. If we're going to require this contract in writing, we're going to follow that written contract rather than undermining it by saying, oh, by the way, you can make an oral contract. The parole evidence law, parole evidence rule is recognized under New York state law. Unlike the statute of frauds, it's recognized in case law. The Court of Appeals has provided that language and agreement, when it accurately memorializes their understanding and intentions of a party, when a dispute arises, the part is best expressed by the language they choose to put in their writing, that they don't not bring in the extrinsic evidence or oral evidence contradicting the contract. New York is a textual jurisdiction, meaning if you write a written contract, that's what they analyze. They don't bring in this oral testimony to contradict it. Again, there's exceptions when you have fraud or duress or some other extrinsic type of situation there, illegality. To clarify an ambiguity or something like that, they don't do that generally because what they want to look to is the four corners of the contract. When does the basic meaning of the parole evidence rule simply holds that oral or extrinsic evidence shall be considered when determining the meaning of the contract itself. Parole evidence applies when an agreement is recorded. That means it's in writing or on paper or in electronic format. And one of the parties attempts to offer outside evidence to prove a term that is contained within that recorded contracts. The courts in New York, when they have an ambiguity in there, when they don't understand what something is, a contract is not ambiguous if on its face it's definite and precise, and it's reasonably susceptible to one meaning. Now, if it's not, ambiguity is a question of law for the judge to decide. It's not a question of fact. Claims of ambiguity, unless you can demonstrate that no one knows, a reasonable person doesn't understand what that is, they're not going to allow for parole or extrinsic evidence. Particularly with a sophisticated arm's length transaction. So if two commercial entities enter into a contract, they're not going to turn around and bring in extrinsic evidence that you wrote what you wrote. When there is an ambiguity, sometimes they will bring that in if a reasonable person wouldn't understand what that is. And that's a question of law. It's a question for a judge to decide. The written contract represents the final expression of the parties. And the parole evidence rule is based on that principle, when a parties record their agreement in writing, they intend that written agreement to be the final expression of that agreement. Accordingly, parole evidence seeks to say, we don't want oral or extrinsic evidence supplement or explain or contradict this written contract. That is our agreement. The written contract supersedes all previous discussions, all previous agreements. They are memorialized in that written agreement. And the purpose and premise of the parole evidence rule is to control the court's decision-making, to direct them to that contract, that they should look at the four corners of the contract. And we're going to talk about contract interpretation a little bit later. But at the end of the day, the parole evidence rule says, look at the contract. And if a reasonable person can come up with a reasonable meaning, that's what it is. You don't go outside of it. You don't bring in oral testimony. You don't bring in other written testimony, again, unless there is some kind of fraud or duress or something like that. Now, what are the exceptions? Because every rule has an exception. The parole evidence rule says you don't bring in outside testimony, not outside evidence, written or oral, unless certain circumstances happen. Number one, ambiguity. If a reasonable person cannot determine what a term is in a contract, and the court needs help understanding what it is, then you can violate the parole evidence rule and bring in extraneous evidence, outside evidence, to prove what that term meant. You cannot violate the plain meaning of the contract. If a reasonable person would understand what that meant, you can't bring in that. But if the term is not clear to an average person, and again, that is a determination of law made by a judge, you can bring in the parole evidence. Similarly, as we discussed before, if you're claiming that there's fraud, that's not what the written contract was. That's not my signature. I signed it, but it was under duress. Well, you can bring in proof against that. Okay. If there's a mistake in the contract, say, that's not what we recorded. That was badly transcribed, or that's illegal. Those things allow you to be able to bring something in. Lastly, parole evidence doesn't apply to subsequent contract modifications. So if you do a modification after you sign the contract, that certainly can be brought in, because that contract has been changed by a subsequent contract. But you cannot bring in a contract change that was done before you signed the contract, because all contract negotiations are deemed as contained within the final expression. So if it's done afterwards, it's an exception to the parole evidence rule. It's done before the contract was signed, it is not, unless, again, it's fraud, duress, mistake, or illegality. Parole evidence rule, very simple, very direct. It says every complete final written contract has to be taken on its terms. You cannot bring in oral testimony to say, that's not what I meant. You can't bring in extraneous written testimony saying, that's not what I meant. You look to the contract itself. Now, there are exceptions. An incomplete contract. Clause 32 was admitted by accident, okay? You can turn around and show that's an incomplete contract. That's not what we meant. That's a fact, a mistake, okay? Ambiguous terms, where no reasonable person can figure out what that meant. It's not a word of the English language. You don't understand what you're doing, okay? Fraud, accident, or mistake, a subsequent modification, or illegality. Those are very narrow exceptions. The general rule is when you have a written contract, a contract has to be interpreted by the contract provisions themselves. Parole evidence rules, as simple as that. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.